Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Don't worry, it's Friday. We're almost done. And we're going to take you through the news of the day eventually. It might take us a few minutes to get to it. You'll see why soon. I'm John Adarola. Brett Ehrlich is here in studio for the Friday show.
Black Shirt Fridays for all of you listening to the podcast. Also, no jacket Fridays.
Yeah, I don't. Who cares?
I've been working out a lot lately. You guys might notice that I am so swole.
You are.
Oh, my
And your hair looks great.
And my hair is done.
Your hair looks great. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about. Very important news. I want to start by saying something that was derived from a conversation we were having right before we went live. And that had to do with theme songs of TV shows. And it made me think about TV shows. And it made me think about successful shows. And I was thinking recently that I hope he doesn't hear this. I'm very happy that Ballers, I've literally never heard anyone say that they watch Ballers.
Really?
So Ballers is The Rock's show. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason I say that is because some people are too successful.
The Rock.
Like, everything that they do works and makes tons of money and they're super cool. If Ballers was as popular as, like, Game of Thrones, it'd be too much.
It'd be too much.
You couldn't have it.
But Ballers is in its, I think it got okay, is it a fifth season?
It keeps getting seasons.
Yeah.
Have you watched it?
Yes, I have watched
it. Is it good?
We had Omar Benson, what's his name, on the show. The now deceased show, Pop Trigger. Mm-hmm. And he was great. He is too nice. The Rock is too successful. The show's, you know.
I haven't watched it. Like, so to be fair, I have no idea what it's like.
I'm glad we're covering
and
this.
And I love The Rock. That's why I'm talking about this at all.
It is.
He's the coolest person in the universe.
It's from the minds that brought you Entourage.
Oh,
so I watched, I got caught up on Ballers, went back and watched Entourage. Mm-hmm. And from a Me Too standpoint, rewatching Entourage is like rewatching Triumph of the Will.
It is so inappropriate to watch Entourage today through the lens of female empowerment.
Yes.
It is just like there's literally a line, I think, in the pilot where the girl's like, I'm sorry, Turtle, I can't make out with you, but because I think I might be the one who has sex with Vince tonight. And then he's like, come on, just make out with me. I'll show you where he eats breakfast.
Oh, my God.
And then she's
weird.
And then she just goes, okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sometimes I'm watching old episodes of Married with Children, and he'll start talking about fat women. And I just think, I look around, like, is anyone hearing this? This is crazy.
There's still, like, a little bit of satire built into, I think, everything on that show. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so. That's true. And look, the reason I say it is because, you know, I'm very interested in success. I actually think maybe this is a stupid idea. I'm not going to be a success, but I want to understand other people's success. I kind of want to do a show or a podcast, which I don't know what it would be called. It's almost like a Malcolm Gladwell thing. Maybe he wrote a book about this. Maybe I read it. I don't know. I saw Amy Schumer was hosting an old episode of SNL. And I thought, when did Amy Schumer go from a name that almost nobody knew to, Amy Schumer. Everybody knows Amy Schumer. When people explode, I'm really interested in that.
So,
like, some people just explode. Like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, literally in a 24-hour period, has like 16,000 Twitter followers. Suddenly she has 700,000.
Will she be the biggest names in the country?
Right? I know.
Yeah.
But I'm just interested in that phenomenon of when things explode and other things that are very similar but that don't explode.
But there's also, that happens, it's with bands as well.
Yeah.
And it's with comedians and everyone's overnight success. And then the just as reliable as the term overnight success is in every headline is the follow-up interview where the comedian goes,
they've been doing it for 20 years.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, but they didn't blow up 5 years before that.
Right.
They blew up then.
I think there's also something very reliable. The next step past that, not reliable, but interesting to look into, is whether you've built up enough skills in your time of struggling so that when you do eventually blow up, you're capable of repeating that success.
That's true.
Like with bands, they say you get your whole life to write your first album and then 18 months to write your second. Mm-hmm. And can you do something equally as impressive for that, you know, sophomore? release.
Interesting. Well, we'll see what the damage report 2 will be like.
Yep.
Anyway, before we get into our prepared stories.
Sophomore release.
Exactly. We have so much to talk about, obviously, Sarah Kavanaugh. We're going to be talking about lead poisoning. We're going to be talking about the border. We have Pramila Malik is going to be coming back. We had an interview with her a little while back. She was a candidate in one of the recent primaries. She was there for one of Cuomo's top aides sentencing. So we're going to be talking about that, both what happened with him, but also what it might say about Cuomo himself. Before we get to all that, though, I do want to say that we'd been talking earlier this week about Hurricane Florence's impact, not just in terms of the people that it's killed, but also the hog lagoons that have been flooded, and that is causing, you know, big issues, obviously, but also the coal ash that has been distributed into the environment as a result of the rain and all of that. It's apparently gotten worse, though, because now one of the Duke Energy plant dams has been breached by the floodwaters. And coal ash is apparently potentially spilling into the Cape Fear River. This is a river where apparently at least 60,000 residents of North Carolina get their drinking water out of there. And coal ash is not something that you want to be drinking in the best of times. Mm-hmm. And so understand that this story, which we're talking about now and sounds like it's a now story, is not just a now story. Last year, Donald Trump pushed for and got deregulation on coal ash storage. I don't know if it would have necessarily affected this particular one or if the old way that we did things would have stopped the breach from happening. Perhaps not. But this story exists in a continuum of deregulation and lack of concern for the environment and the human toll of when that government action comes due.
And this is not the kind of coal like charcoal that Gwyneth wants you to put in your water. This is the stuff that they scrub out of the inside of the coal factory plumes and other such byproduct, and they don't want it. They don't want it continually, you know, over the course of years leaching into your water supply.
Yeah. So,
let alone like immediately inundating it with that.
Exactly. In addition to everything else, the feces, the dead animals, the chemicals, all the stuff that's
in
the
water. And
while
those things may sound delicious,
they don't.
They're not good for you.
No. Turns out. That's what Wikipedia's for. Okay, so I want to talk about, we're going to get into Kavanaugh, but I want to talk about bad ideas because I've got three for you. These should have been obvious bad ideas. The first, this is a headline, failed attempt to put dead whale in dumpster, quote, was a mistake. Yeah. Yes, it was a, we said baby whale, so everyone thought it was a small whale. It weighed 4,000 pounds.
The word whale should never make you think small, even when preceded by the word baby.
I guess we could put it in a dumpster. No, that's a terrible, terrible idea.
In their defense, no one's like, all right, kids, come around. Today we're going to teach you the alphabet and how to dispose of a whale.
But it's not your job.
My wife was like, what happens when our cat dies? What are you going to do? And I was like, just put in a bag and throw it out. Is that wrong?
Apparently.
Yeah, but you shouldn't do that. Should call the vet, apparently.
Does it weigh 4,000 pounds?
Not yet.
No, you can be fine then.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's bad idea number one. Bad idea number two, this Halloween costume, it is the Yandy Brave Red Maiden costume. Someone maybe watched the first couple minutes of Handmaid's Tale and didn't get the lesson there? They're saying this is empowerment. I'm not sure that it is. I think this is the exact opposite. So, oh my God, I did not know that you had that.
Yes, John?
You are demonstrating the third bad idea here. No.
In what way is this not the sexy Handmaid's outfit?
How did I not see him putting that on out of the corner of my eye? If you're listening to this podcast, he's wearing a Handmaid's Tale outfit now.
It's not. I had one
it's
that
not
was
sexy,
my
though,
wife's.
Don't worry.
We did an Archer thing, mm-hmm. and she has like a bustier that was Katya, and that actually works better, but it seems.
Interesting.
It seems inappropriate.
I have no idea how we have that B-roll, but thank you for getting it.
It's just that people thoughtlessly make the
anything
sexy
big.
Version of anything.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is, someone who does not
understand for sexy
the
toad.
Severity.
Yeah, exactly. No, but so I love the show
sexy
and the book.
Been around for years.
Watch the show, read the book. They're both great. You'll learn lessons that they did not. Here's a third bad idea, though, and this perhaps should have been the most obvious of all. The one person whose opinion on Judge Kavanaugh and the accuser that we didn't need to hear, Donald Trump, who waited a little while and then decided to tweet. Bad idea. He tweeted, Judge Brett Kavanaugh is a fine man with an impeccable reputation. Well, except for the one thing. Who is under assault by radical left-wing politicians who don't want to know the answers. They just want to destroy and delay. Facts don't matter. I go through with this with them every day in DC. So we got three tweets. This is the first. Very interesting. The politicians don't want to know the answer. So obviously this is a call for an investigation, perhaps by the FBI. He goes on to say, I have no doubt that if the attack on Dr. Ford was as bad as she says, charges would have been immediately filed with local law enforcement authorities by either her or her loving parents. I ask that she bring those filings forward so that we can learn date, time, and place. So again, he wants the facts. He wants an investigation. Third tweet, the radical left lawyers want the FBI to get involved now. Why didn't someone call the FBI 36 years ago? Well, we don't have time travel. So after two calls for an investigation, he mocks those who want the FBI to find out what's actually going on.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today. And get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Thank you, Donald Trump.
He is the dead whale in a dumpster of political analysis and commentary.
I love the idea that it's like,
hello, FBI. The idea, why didn't someone call the FBI 36 years ago? Call the police, call whatever 36 years ago, but like.
You weren't going to call the FBI.
This guy, you know when you start trying to think about which part of the irony you should point out, and you feel like you're being too obvious, like, and then it makes you go absolutely crazy that the person who's doing it does not recognize the irony of talking about accusers of sexual assault.
Yeah.
And the role they play, and then just completely ignoring things. Disingenuous comments like her loving parents.
Mm-hmm. What is that supposed to mean? What place does that have in the tweet?
He should know better than anybody that, you know, given that he has victimized a wide swath of different kinds of people, he should know that there's different ways that individuals at different parts of their lives respond to these kinds of sexual misconduct activities.
Yeah. 100%. And so the actual facts, Rain makes clear, in reality, 7 out of every 10 victims don't report to the police. And even of those who do, only a very small percentage of the assailants are ever charged or ever have any sort of punishment whatsoever. So you are continually told to worry about false accusations. No one is worrying enough about the true accusations that actually go nowhere and there's no justice. I would like to give him at least a little bit of credit, Donald Trump, for asking why a woman didn't report while also making clear why women don't report inside of the same 280 characters. These sorts of attacks are obviously why so many women are incredibly terrified about coming forward with their story, because they know that they will be called liars and the guy who did it will be defended.
He's trying to say that the Democrats don't want answers. How is that true when they're asking for an investigation?
It doesn't make any sense to anyone. So here's what's going to happen. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, someone who knew Christine Blasey Ford at the time is going to talk about a change in behavior that she exhibited around the time of this alleged attack, and we'll be breaking that down. Welcome back, everyone. We return to breaking news. It's breaking because Dinesh D'Souza is broken now as a result of it. He had tweeted this. Again, I don't like reading his tweets, but you'll understand why in a bit. He said this, normally colonies provide resources for the nation that rules them. What does Puerto Rico provide the US? And he's a historian, so he of course actually did research before asking that question. It was clearly rhetorical. No, he did not, and he wasn't interested in a response, but he got a response from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who tweeted, hundreds of thousands of soldiers to the US military, national supply of hospital IV bags and medical supplies, historically sugar, coffee, crops, a strategic port in the Atlantic, and importantly for the 1%, one of the biggest loophole tax havens for the super rich. That is pretty damn good.
Nailed it. Got him.
So Dinesh D'Souza is one of those people that the right is like excited by. Like they think that he makes great points. He's a great debater. Like, I guess like the same sort of school as like a Charlie Kirk or something, where they ask these rhetorical questions without actually caring about the response. They know nothing about history, modern politics, any of that, and yet still have this cult like around them. I'll never understand it. How low the bar is set for people to think that these guys, they're the ones who are really doing it.
Right, but the threshold for looking into fact-checking Dinesh D'Souza is so high for these people. Like they're it's gonna take so much extra effort to fact-check Dinesh D'Souza that they're never gonna do it.
Yeah.
They already believe that he's right. He seems to look smart when he's wearing a suit. I've seen
That's
his
true.
Face before.
That's true. Do we look less smart right now? Because we're not wearing suits.
I don't look smart
at
all.
Yeah, we probably don't look that smart. Yeah. Anyway, good job, AOC. Loved it. Okay, let's turn back to Kavanaugh. So they love to say that there's the people attacking her, I should say. They love to say there's no contemporaneous evidence. It's just an allegation that something happened 36 years ago, and she has been waiting for decades to take down this powerful man. It's totally made up. There's nothing that we can find out. Why even have an investigation? What's the point of the FBI? Well, now the New York Times has spoken with an apparent male friend of hers at the time and said that after the summer of the alleged attack, Ford, then known as Chrissy Blasey, quote, fell off the face of the earth socially. The guy said, all I remember is after my junior year thinking, where is Chrissy Blasey? She was the sort of person a lot of people paid attention to. She was a leader. She was great. I was like, where did she go? And they had some other sort of quotes to that effect. So, although she says that she didn't tell anyone at the time about what happened, and I think that every compassionate, thinking, reasoning human being can understand why a young girl might not have told anyone, especially in the social and political context of that time, you know, 36 years ago, apparently people around her saw that something had happened, that there was a big change in behavior that perhaps now, in light of what we know, suddenly makes a lot more sense.
This is right. This is what happens. This is how it plays out when someone undergoes an experience like this. Now, is this enough to have us walk away saying that this absolutely happened? Not necessarily, but that's not what people are asking for right now. Mm-hmm. No one's asking you to say, guilty, convict him. All that really tangibly is being asked for right now is to have an investigation take place.
Yeah.
And the refusal is so frustrating. I heard Mitch McConnell make a statement that was received with such huge uproarious applause, which was, no matter what happens,
we're confirming him.
Justice Kavanaugh is going to be on the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And in the face of these accusations, it is a ridiculous sentiment. Because as you keep pointing out, he's still lying about it today, if true. But also, it's so frustrating because there's also this truth that he lied under oath in his previous confirmation hearing. Yeah. And that stuff that didn't come out during that confirmation hearing, but since has been corroborated, which is he did have access to the very stolen documents from the Democrats that he denied having access to.
Yeah.
And it's so frustrating. What are we supposed to do? It feels like we're putting something like tangible and identifiable out there as like, this is something I think even you guys can wrap your head around, which is it would be terrible if this happened and he continues to deny it to this day just because of his ambition.
Yeah.
And they still can't wrap their head around it, because the thing it's easier to wrap their head around is we've been working for this as he's been denying this one thing for 36 years. We've been working for 36 years to get this Supreme Court. Yeah. We're not going to give up on it now just because he tried to rape someone.
Yeah.
Allegedly. And continues to lie about it.
Yeah, 100%. I am curious about, you know, what's going to happen. And I'm going to say what people think about this. There's a poll support for him. Of course, that doesn't matter because they don't care about what you or I think about this. If they feel like they have the power to push this through, they're going to do it. But NBC News, Wall Street Journal did a poll. 38% of registered voters say they oppose Kavanaugh. That's up from 29% last month. 34% support him. So more oppose him than support him. This apparently has not happened before. This is the highest level of opposition to a Supreme Court nominee since NBC and the Wall Street Journal have been doing this polling. Donald Trump in a rally last night said that he has an incredible degree of support. It is incredible, but it's not the support that's incredible. And I want to add a little bit more granularity to that. If we could bring up this chart, you're going to see for different groups how their view of Kavanaugh and his nomination have changed from August to September of this year. If you're listening, I'll sum it up. Both for GOP men and women, they are now more supportive of him than they were back in August, before they knew anything really about him, but also about his alleged sexual assault. You can see, by the way, and this is perhaps even scarier, Democratic women are less supportive of him now. Democratic men, slightly more supportive than they were before they found out. It is possible that is a margin of error thing. But you still don't want to see it move in that direction just in case. Independent men, independent women becoming less supportive. So, look, regardless of whether you are a conservative, regardless of whether you believe that Christine Blasey Ford is definitely telling the truth or there might be some credibility to it, it shouldn't have gone up for any of these groups, I don't think, unless it's being driven by sheer partisanship and tribalism and not anything having to do with their actual views about the substance of this person and what they would represent on the court.
I believe it was Sarah Silverman who said that this, with these accusations, the confirmation hearing has slowed to a screeching normal pace. Mm-hmm. Has come to a screeching normal pace. And that's exactly what it is. People are trying to jam this thing through so quickly.
Yeah.
And no one wants it more. I can't tell. Why do you think Clarence Thomas is thinking about this right now? Where he's like, let's get someone worse than me on here quick. Or like, can we just talk about anything else?
Well, he's certainly not saying anything, if I had to guess. I'm sure he doesn't care. I'm sure he understands his role on the Supreme Court and the role of Kavanaugh. They are smart individuals, regardless of, you know, how immoral their positions might be. And they know that all that BS about, you know, it's about judicial temperament and, you know, a respect for the original. None of that's true. These are political operatives, and he wants a buddy. He wants an ally on the court.
Yep.
And he'd rather have a Kavanaugh than a Garland, I'm sure.
And you too can stop him by calling a number.
Oh, that's a great idea. We should continue to put pressure because that poll is one thing. If senators happen to look at it, they might know that you don't support this candidate. But actual pressure on them is far more likely to have some sort of effect. So we've been having the number up on the screen. But if you're listening, the number you can call to reach your senator is 202-804-8191. And you can call there, put some pressure on them to do the right thing. Not even necessarily stop Kavanaugh, but at the very least have the investigation that Donald Trump's tweets have apparently been demanding. Okay, we're going to go to our break just slightly early here. When we come back, though, more from the border, a very clear indication of the priorities of this administration in shocking terms. Okay, so once again, breaking news coming out of the break. Oh, maybe that's what it's named after. Okay, so let's see. Quick reaction. It's not.
Great connection there.
Thank you.
Breaking news.
Susan Collins says that she is, quote, appalled by Trump's tweet criticizing Christine Blasey Ford. Of course, it's tweets, multiple things. And he also said similar stuff at a rally last night. She says it's reasonable for Kavanaugh's confirmation vote to be delayed so that Ford can testify on either Wednesday or Thursday, and she can be made as comfortable as possible.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I think when you say make someone as comfortable as possible, it sounds like hospice treatment.
Yeah.
It's like, and it's exactly right. That's exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, we could fix the problem, but nah. I've done all I can do. I love this. I'm shocked, appalled to see that the president is kind of a jerk.
Yeah. And to a woman.
I'm definitely not going to do anything about it.
No. So she's saying that.
I want to make her comfortable as, like, our credibility dies.
Yeah. I want to know, what is appalled worth? How appalled are you? If they don't delay it, and they say you have Monday or you have nothing, are you appalled by that? Are you appalled enough to vote against Kavanaugh? Or are you kind of appalled and in the end you'll just go along with it?
Right. It's like I'm appalled at how terrible this soup is. Nom, 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 soup, soup.
Soup is the example you come up with?
I had soup yesterday and I forgot how good soup is.
Okay. Okay, let's turn to other incredibly important issues. The situation at the border. Obviously, Donald Trump and his administration are interested in detaining literally every child on the planet in some form of tent. And they're doing great in that. You know, obviously, we reported earlier that the number of kids being detained has, I think it's quintupled since May of last year. And because of that, obviously, they need to spend a lot more money on it. And so when Hurricane Florence was on its way, we found out that money was being diverted from hurricane preparedness to pay for some of the housing and all of that of the huge and ever rising number of kids that they're detaining. And people really cared about that for 3.5 seconds. But they did it. They got the money. And here's the thing. It costs a lot of money. And so they need to divert more money from different things. And so Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar outlined his new plan to reallocate up to $266 million. That's 26.6 times the scandal we were talking about before. So that's money that would go to the Unaccompanied Alien Children Program in the Office of Refugee Resettlement. Okay, so $266 million to help expand and extend the amount of kids they can detain. Well, where are they going to get that from? Well, they're going to get $16.7 million from Head Start, $5.7 million from the Ryan White HIV/AIDS Program, and $13.3 million from the National Cancer Institute. But money is also being diverted from programs dedicated to mental and maternal health, women's shelters, and substance abuse.
But most of the money will come from the Department of Irony.
It's like, if you put together a list of, well, obviously they're not going to take money from that.
Mm-hmm.
Not from AIDS.
The Candy for Babies Foundation.
Seriously.
We will take the
it's
candy.
It's like it. Every one of those, Head Start, first of all, it's like, we don't have enough money to properly fund Head Start in the first place. But now it's like, you know those kids that like desperately need this help? No,
mm-mm.
We need tents for babies. Babies that we're detaining that we don't need to detain.
Right.
They previously hadn't been, even when the levels of kids crossing over were just as high. We weren't choosing to detain so many.
And they should at least have the decency to change the name of Head Start to Late Start.
Yeah. Delayed Start.
Now the delayed, you'll get there eventually, mm-hmm. program.
Yeah, or like head hunting or something like that.
It's bad news. It is bad news. And I don't think that they really, I don't know, they just take the money where they can find it. And from places where they're like, well, we're definitely not going to solve that problem.
Yeah,
let's spend the money on dealing with the problem we continue to make worse.
Yeah, because of our choices.
Yeah, because
our continuing choices.
Yeah, they could absolutely not do this.
And again, the numbers, just to remind you, there were 2,400 kids detained, immigrant children, in May of 2017, 12,800 earlier this month. So since we initially reported that, by the way, I have not seen any updated number. If you believe that it is still 12,800, you're insane. I've got a head start for you, if you believe that. A defunded one, to be fair. It is certainly higher than that. It is going to continue to go up because nothing has actually changed. Well, that's not true. There are more tents than there once were. HHS is expanding capacity of a Texas tent city from 400 to 3,800 beds. Beds in tents, though, to be fair. The estimated cost of operating these emergency facilities is $750 per child per day, three times as high as a regular shelter, but you get to sleep in a tent.
And the thing about emergencies is it implies that right now is worse than it's going to be later.
Is there any reason to believe that?
It's not. The emergency is going to become the norm. They're making it worse. And the way to avert the emergency, it's not like a hurricane where it's like we have to wait till this passes.
Yeah.
You just stop doing it.
And well, if we're waiting for anything to pass, it's their policy.
Yeah.
That's the hurricane. It's a hurricane. It's an unnatural disaster that is going on right now.
Right. How is this flood going on in my backyard? Oh, maybe I should turn off the sprinklers.
Yes.
That's the problem.
So here's the thing. I tweeted about this yesterday. One of my frustrations, and I totally understand it. Obviously, like, there are so many things to focus on. Like, we've been talking about the battle over the future of the Supreme Court because that is incredibly important. We were talking a lot about Hurricane Florence over the past week. Super important. All these topics, incredibly important. But here's the thing. the crisis at the border, and when I say that, I mean all of this. Obviously, the kids aren't just being held at the border. It's expanded beyond that. We had 6 weeks, maybe, of national outrage and focus on it. It hasn't changed. We got minor changes to family separation. That is it. The only thing that has changed in the crisis at the border is the level of media and popular attention going to it. The crisis remains because the policy remains and the people who put those policies into effect remain. It is the same. We have simply moved on. The media has moved on. But the crisis is not just similar, it's worse. There are more and more kids being detained literally every day. God only knows when we come back to this in a month or two what that number will be to. And it's not going to change until we renew the focus, we force them to change it as we did with the family separation policy, and then get these people out of office because they can't be trusted inside of 10 miles of any immigrant kid.
There was a pressure release valve, which was allowing these kids to be given over to sponsors, family members that are around there. But they've raised the they've started to fingerprint the people that come and take the children and run them through the database to see if they're here legally or whatever. And that is, lowering the amount of people who come to sponsor the kids and give them a home.
And so there have been arrests.
And there have been arrests, for sure, of people who aren't even, there's citizens who have lost the ability to re-enter the country.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating. And
incredibly frustrating. And so, look, I guess to the extent that I want you to have, homework over the weekend, because you'll have some free time, do something about this. Call somebody. Say something. Donate money to one of the organizations that is trying to fix the situation. They remain. They're still working, as they were literally in years leading up to this crisis, let alone now. If we move on, they're not going to change the policy. The kids will remain in detainment. Okay, I want to just quickly mention a story that we have had prepared literally all week and haven't gotten to. And it has to do with history and, ironically, things not being covered. And we weren't covering it. So the Texas Education Board has a change to streamline their social studies curriculum by removing some unnecessary historical figures. They took a preliminary vote to make a number of changes, including scrapping mention of Hillary Clinton and Helen Keller from sections on citizenship, and removing a phrase referring to the, quote, optimism of the many immigrants who sought a better life in America. We can't have it. It takes too long to say that. We have to streamline the curriculum by removing these people. And we just randomly chose ones that we don't personally care about their story and something that seems to glorify the experience of immigrants who obviously go through a great deal of troubles in their home country and then moving here.
Why Helen Keller?
I don't know.
Talk about someone who is...
I didn't see it coming.
Yeah, did not see or hear it. Maybe she won't notice. She won't notice we could do anything. People are talking behind her back.
Do you want to know why?
Please.
They said they dropped her because she, quote, does not best represent the concept of citizenship. Instead, military and first responders do. So this is curriculum by way of Trump congressional endorsement, where the only thing you say is they're great on guns, they're great on the Second Amendment, great on the border, great on the vets, they love all that stuff. The only people that matter are the military. If you have the politicians, the military, and then the forgotten masses, there is a political system that is based on that sort of view of the country. It's not one that I would want associated with the United States necessarily.
It's just so strange because this is the one way, by changing the education protocol curriculum in your area, that you are really just teaching propaganda to kids, and you are just absolutely ranking in order of importance the things kids should know about.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with adding stuff about patriotism and contributing to the country in a way that if it did seem responsible, earnest as an attempt to make kids better.
Yeah.
But you're taking away Helen Keller, who overcame insane amounts of adversity.
I couldn't have.
John's really smart, but he's not as smart as Helen Keller.
No, I'm not.
I probably could find a way because I'm really,
maybe.
MacGyver.
By the way, with that new time that they have saved by streamlining it, they reinserted references to Judeo-Christian laws, Moses' influence on the writing of the U.S.'s founding documents, and a reference to the heroism of the Alamo's defenders. So I guess that's the unstreamlining of the curriculum, but that's what they chose to do.
The Moses part is a pretty big tell, guys.
Yeah, that's a pretty big one.
That's where you're coming
from. Again, these are the people who don't like it when libs try to indoctrinate your kids. Just remember that one. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Pramila Malik is going to be rejoining us on the show. We're going to be talking about the sentencing of a top Cuomo aide. What does it say about the current state of Cuomo? And more importantly, perhaps, what does it say about his political future? So in New York, Governor Cuomo has certainly had some good news recently, obviously, in his primary battle. But the news hasn't all been good recently. And we're joined now by Pramila Malik, who's going to talk about the sentencing of one of his longtime top aides. Incredibly interesting information. Welcome back to the show, Pramila.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me again.
We're very glad to have you here. So Joseph Percoco had been facing some corruption charges. Perhaps you can help explain those a little bit better. But you were also at his sentencing yesterday, correct?
Yep. And I was at his trial, his entire 7-week trial as well.
Wow.
So Joseph Percoco is one of the closest aides to Governor Cuomo. It was reported also during the trial, but also in the media, that getting a call from Joseph Percoco was the equivalent of getting a call from the governor himself. Now, he was just convicted to 6 years in prison for a pay-to-play bribery scheme that involved two different projects. One was core development of a parking lot project in Syracuse, but the one that I've been involved in was a pay-to-play bribery scheme involving Competitive Power Ventures. It was a project that consisted of a 650-megawatt frac gas power plant that was built in my community in Orange County. And actually, members of our group, including myself, filed the criminal complaints with the U.S. Attorney's Office that led to the investigation, subsequent indictment, trial, and conviction sentencing. Cuomo doesn't like me.
No, he's not a fan. I get it. If he's wrapped up in this sort of thing, I've seen some of the amounts that have been bandied about of the amount of the monetary corruption are pretty significant. And what I'm wondering is if the connection between the aide and the governor is as close and longstanding, will this have any effect on Cuomo, or has he been able to insulate himself from Percoco?
Well, this should, in principle, be the nail in the coffin for Governor Cuomo's future political career or his presidential ambitions. But we have to think about how Cuomo was able to get away with this for so many years in the first place. He is largely sheltered by a large number of environmental organizations and NGOs that give him cover persistently for his betrayal of the environment and his betrayal of the climate, because ultimately, what was this power plant project really about? This power plant project was about plugging New York City, which is the second largest consumer of power in the world, to frack gas dependency for the next 40 years.
Wow.
That's really what this project was about. And that's what the corruption really entailed. And there was the illegal corruption that Percoco got caught for, but there was the legal corruption, which involved hundreds of thousands of dollars of donations, campaign donations to Governor Cuomo, both for his 2010 gubernatorial race as well as his 2014 gubernatorial race. Actually, these payments started way back in 2008 when he was Attorney General.
Wow. So look, I'm really curious because it was interesting that the night after the primary, I saw two headlines about what his primary victory over Cynthia Nixon represented, with some saying that the way he had campaigned, the strength of how many votes she got, was the nail in the coffin for his future political ambitions. And some saying that because he was able to ward off such a strong challenge, oh, now the road is clear for him to run for president someday. You obviously have spent a lot of time dealing with Cuomo and his ambitions. What do you think that this the Percoco sentencing, what effect does that have on his future potential presidential ambitions?
Well, a lot of that is going to depend on these quote unquote brokers of the narrative, both within the progressive movement as well as within the media. It's how they end up casting Governor Cuomo. The testimony in the trial clearly implicates the governor. There were about 5 or 6 different state agencies involved that were under the influence of Joseph Percoco enacting the policies that Percoco needed to enact in order to fulfill his obligation to his paymaster. And that could not have possibly happened without the governor's involvement and approval and knowledge. So a lot is going to depend on the media. I mean, we had the New York Times never once, not once, covered the project at the center of this bribery scheme, the power plant that's in Orange County. Even the judge was forced to acknowledge it during her sentencing because she was inundated with letters from the public about it. But, you know, the media really still has not covered this. And so, it can easily be passed off as run-of-the-mill corruption that Cuomo had no knowledge of. But when you look at how this advances in a critical industry that is part of a national agenda, because both political parties are 100% on board with this national agenda to make the entire country dependent on fracked gas. So Cuomo's relationship in advancing that national agenda needs to be closely examined, scrutinized, and rebuked. And you have to remember that fracking and the environment and the climate were big issues in the 2016 presidential race.
Yeah.
And a lot of people say that's, you know, kind of what brought Hillary Clinton down.
Well, you know, and fingers crossed that now that he has made it through this primary challenge, the media doesn't assume that, oh, well, if there were concerns about his corruption, apparently it didn't bother the people enough. The media sometimes takes that as an opportunity to stop doing their job and investigating these sorts of things. But fingers crossed that that doesn't happen in this case.
Well, right. It's important to know this was not run-of-the-mill corruption. This is corruption that is causing bodily harm on entire communities right now as I speak.
100%. And thankfully, there are environmental activists like you out there holding them accountable for these sorts of projects. Pramila Malik, thank you so much for joining the show once again. Always love having you on.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. One more quick break. We come back this week. We learned something. I'm going to turn to you guys for that. There are just moments remaining, and so it's time for This Week I Learned.
We've ever done.
That is the best thing we've ever done. So what I have learned can be summed up with two words, Yeti and Toad.
Ugh. Ew. Hey, watch the happy half hour. John and I go through, that's at 5 o'clock today, Pacific. It's 8 o'clock Eastern. We're in prime time now. Mm-hmm. And we will tell everyone, we'll go through the entire Trump White House and determine which video game character their penis looks like.
And we nail it.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Okay, so you guys have also learned stuff, and you tweeted in, Mocha Chipper learned that we will never play Mario Brothers the same ever again. There were a lot of Toad emojis sent to me this week. Too many, I would say. Spicy D. DeNova learned, by the way, that the Damage Report podcast is excellent. Sure. Don't know how to rate it, though, not user of iProducts. Seriously, John, you're fast becoming my favorite TYT host. I'm not a big fan of him, but I appreciate that you like him. But here's what I will say. If you have not already rated the podcast and you are a consumer of iProducts or whatever, it's very easy to do. And you can find it just by typing into Google, The Damage Report Podcast. It'll come up. Here's what I would like. I would like 25 more ratings before Monday. And there are many people watching this, most of them traitors. They won't actually do it, but not you. You're different.
You are different.
You will take the 15 seconds it takes to type The Damage Report Podcast into Google and then click 5 stars and write a little review. And if you send it to me, a screenshot, I will send you a funny GIF on Twitter. It's a thing that I'm happy to do. So thank you in advance.
Your eyes are looking so pretty today.
They are. We can see them through the camera. That's how high def this is. Okay, a little bit more for you. Teddy Labarca learned that Trump asked Spain to build a wall over the Sahara to keep out migrants. Said it couldn't possibly be longer than our border with Mexico. Turns out it's 3,000 miles long. Here's the funny thing. The fact that it's 3,000 miles long is like one of 20 reasons that is the stupidest idea that I've ever heard.
You know, why would we need to build a wall through the symbol for desolate wilderness that kills people anyway? The Sahara.
But what you're missing is, and that's true, it's the desolate human-killing wilderness that you hit before you hit the water barrier that is an effective natural moat. This is not the solution to the problems. Is it possible that there's a simpler sort of way that would be just for both parties and not just a wall that's built?
Whatever, whatever. Give me the president of the Sahara. I'll do it myself. Hello, giant snake. Hello, giant rattlesnake. All right, that's the joke's over. Okay, good.
Okay, good.
I'm gonna hang up.
Nope, you hang up. No, that's a Gaffigan thing. Okay, and finally, you learned this is from Call for Action that water has more than one standpoint. Thank you. So that is what we learned. We will forget all of it, by the way. So enjoy that. Also, if you've been watching this live, you should know that we're doing live coverage of the Beto O'Rourke Ted Cruz debates. Myself and Brooke Thomas will be doing that. That's at 7 p.m. Eastern, available only for members. And if you're not a member, there is still time. You can go to tyt.com/join and become a member today and get not only all of our shows, but also special content just for members like this. Thank you, Brett, both for being on the show today and making it possible all the other days. Thank you for watching. We'll be back on Monday. Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.